This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU and 88.5 WMUB. I'm Mark Purcell. Hope you're keeping cool on this steamy Monday afternoon. On the way, author Curtis Sittenfeld will be in the studio to discuss her newest novel, Sisterland, and to answer your questions. She's in town for a reading and signing at Joseph Beth Booksellers this evening. That's coming up later, but to begin with, to quote the beloved and classic Bugs Bunny cartoon, "What's Opera, Doc?" Where do you stand when it comes to opera? Love it or hate it? Or have you just not had the opera experience yet? And if so, why not? Be part of the discussion by calling 513-419-7100. That's 419-7100. Email us at talk@wvxu.org. You can post a question on Facebook or tweet us at 917WVXU. Joining me in the studio is the artistic director of the Cincinnati Opera, Evans Mirages. Hi, Evans.
Hi, Mark. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You know, long before the internet, television, or the movies, as I was thinking about this, audiences always had to find some form of entertainment and many different forms of entertainment. Before we get too deep into it, share a brief history of the origin of opera.
It starts in Italy, and it starts at princely courts, actually, in the center of Italy, in Tuscany. And it also is tied to the rediscovery during the Renaissance of all things ancient and Greek. And one of the things that the Renaissance was so excited about was rediscovering the way that Greeks did theater. Theater to them was music and singing and dancing and speech. And so these learned nobles decided that they wanted to try and recreate in modern times that aesthetic where all of the performing arts would come together in one sort of super art form. But the interesting thing about the origins of opera is that operas were first done in rooms probably no bigger than a small ballroom. First operas maybe had 50 people attending them.
I was going to say, it's a much the nobility who could afford to have the operas put together were the ones who were being entertained, they and their friends.
Exactly. But what began to happen, if we take Italy as the example and the cradle of opera, is that by the 19th century, when we get the famous names like Rossini from The Barber of Seville, and eventually, of course, Verdi, who was the greatest 19th century opera composer of them all in Italian, opera for 100 years, let's say, becomes the primary public entertainment for the rising middle class. People would actually now be able to go and buy a ticket and go to the opera house. It wasn't the province of aristocracy anymore. So it became a great public entertainment art form, the movies of its day, basically. It waned a bit in the 20th century with the advent of movies and television and everything, but Italy is still the place when we think of opera, we think of Italy.
Many great operas along the way in the Cincinnati Opera this season has been highlighting many of them, not all from Italy, but for the final two productions of the summer season, you have one of the greatest from Italy, Aida by Verdi.
The grandest opera of them all. It was written towards the end of Verdi's life. He'd basically retired at that point. He'd worked very, very hard for a long time. And if you read his letters, all he really wanted to do was be a farmer. He was a very, very advanced man for his time in husbandry, both in terms of animal production as well as crops. And he had a beautiful farm, and that's what he really wanted to do. But he was still at heart an artist, and he got tempted by a fat commission. Money talks.
Yes.
Well, he did. He accepted it in part because he wanted to make improvements on his farm. So he used the money he would make from opera to make improvements in his technology, as it were.
Supporting his hobby.
Exactly right. Exactly right. But it comes towards the end of his life, and it's at a time in his life when he has nothing left to prove. Everybody knows he's the greatest living opera composer in Italian. And so when he writes Aida, he writes it totally from the heart and totally about the issues that matter most to him in his life as a person and his life as an artist.
Well, that passion, I guess, comes through in that opera. And this is a grand opera on the grandest scale, I guess you could say.
It's two operas in one evening, which is one of the things I love about Aida. The first half of the opera, the first two acts, are very public. They're two great choral scenes. The consecration scene, where Radames is being conferred as the general that will lead the Egyptians into battle against the Ethiopians. And then in the second, what we call the triumphal scene, Radames returning with the spoils of war, including prisoners, and lots of booty. And then, for the third and the fourth acts, it becomes a much more intimate love triangle. So Verdi crams into one amazing evening, the most incredible spectacle and the most heartfelt story, all at the same time, as only he could do.
Now, in this day and age, you were mentioning there's a bit of a waning in the 20th century thanks to the advent of, well, radio and television and now the internet and all distracting audiences. What is it, do you think, that has maintained opera's popularity through the years despite all these distractions?
I think there are a couple of things. First of all, opera is social. And I say that in the highest and best sense of the word. There is nothing that competes with being in a room where live music is being performed without amplification. When you hear these grand operatic voices and you realize that that is coming from a human being with no microphone in front of them, over a 60 to 70 piece orchestra in a theater that seats 3,400 people and it still changes your hairstyle, you know you're in the presence of something very, very special. With no criticism of being able to watch something on DVD or being able to listen to the radio or have your iPod, live music heard in community is still one of the most thrilling experiences you can have. It's like the thrill of going to a football game. Okay, so they're not, you know, no one is, you know, throwing a touchdown pass. Well, they are, because when a soprano hits the high C, as she does in O Patria Mia, the second aria in the opera for the soprano, it's like a touchdown, because it's high wire performing and it's glorious when it happens. I think that's one reason. I think opera is social. I think also opera still, especially now that we have super titles, you'll never be ignorant about what's going on stage. We like to perform our operas at Cincinnati Opera in the original languages in which they were written, which are, generally speaking, Italian, French, and German. Once in a while in Russian, very rarely, let's say, in Czech. But with the advent of supertitles in the 1980s, and let's remember that Cincinnati Opera was the first American opera company to use supertitles. The very first company was in Canada. We were the first in the United States, long before the Met and everybody else. But with those supertitles projecting what the singers are singing into English above the screen, above the stage, rather, you'll never be at a loss. And the payoff for me, as much as I love it in drama, is in comedy. Because when you have a comedy like The Marriage of Figaro on stage, or Don Giovanni, which has lots of comedic elements, which we did this summer, and you hear the audience get the jokes.
Yes.
It's great for the performers, too, because then their performance takes another level because they're being understood. So there are no barriers to coming to opera. Let's face it. It brings together all the performing art forms in a way that only the movies can do. But it's live. So you have the musicians in the pit, you have the singers on the stage with acting, and in an opera like Aida, you have ballet, you have beautiful costumes, sumptuous scenery. There is enough steel in this production of Aida's set to build a small skyscraper. It reaches 42 feet into the sky, and it will take your breath away when you see it. So I think it's those two things. I think opera can still speak to our emotions in a completely direct, heart-to-heart way. And it also speaks to our emotions in a way that's bigger than life. You know, we all have our problems. Relationship problems, money problems, political problems. Opera has the ability to take those problems and or those situations in our life and make them grander than we could ever be, almost like a lesson for us to take solace in the fact that even kings and queens have a bad day. Gods and goddesses screw up. And yet when we come to operas like Bohème, one of the most beloved of all of operas, it's about poor college kids. In Paris in the early 19th century, maybe, but a poor college kid falling in love is a poor college kid falling in love. So the stories are both grand and intimate at the same time and completely accessible.
So that's Evan Mirages, Artistic Director of the Cincinnati Opera, telling why he loves opera. Why do you love opera? Or why have you not been to an opera? What's been keeping you from going to an opera production, whether here in Cincinnati or anywhere? Let us know and share your comments and questions at 513-419-7100, 419-7100, or email us, talk@wvxu.org. Now, you talked about the grand aspects. You know, really it is, and I was told by one of my music teachers back in the day that it's got sex, it's got violence, it's got great music. Of course you gotta love opera. And really that's about how it is with most productions.
It is. And nowadays especially too, we have a younger generation of directors especially. I'm thinking about our other opera at the end of the season, Galileo Galilei. Our director is still a 30-something. and our performers are all 30-somethings, maybe 20-somethings even. And they bring a modern sensibility to the production. Funnily enough, Galileo is an opera that doesn't have any overt sex or violence, but it's a very sexy show because there is an artistic sensibility now that, for lack of a better way of putting it, it's very theatrical. It's like going to see a straight play on steroids because you have, you know, it's that, that thing where if an emotion can't be adequately expressed in words, the only thing left to you is to sing because that's the next level up in terms of emotional excitement. So I think, yes, I think particularly for some of the more modern operas, for some of the younger producers and directors around today, they get it, that we are in a much more visually oriented society. Opera singers now are quite glamorous. Every once in a while, you still have a rather large human being who just happens to be possessed with a God-given voice. But even so, costuming now makes even slightly larger people look much more presentable. But I have to say, I'm noticing many more gym bodies in opera costumes, both men and women, yes, than ever before. So they're approachable. They're believable, even when they're singing of these outsized emotions.
This is What's Opera, Doc, on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 and 88.5, exploring what the draw for opera is. I know a lot of people, you mentioned it before when the surtitles, supertitles came along, language was something that people used as a reason that they didn't go to opera, but that's really changed in this day and age.
It has, and not only has it changed for the better, we are also seeing more operas that are in English. And we have, as one of the last two operas of our season, an Italian story about the life of Galileo, but it's in English, written by Philip Glass in 1992, who was one of the great composers of the second half of the 20th and now into our 21st century, with a libretto by Mary Zimmerman. And it tells the story of this amazing human being who really changed the way we look at the heavens forever, and who was persecuted for it by a church that, in its time, didn't believe that the earth moved around the sun. They felt that the biblical teaching said that the earth was stationary. The earth was the center of the universe and everything revolved around us. Well, it's in English, and it's in very wonderful, understandable English, particularly since we're doing it in the Corbett Theater at the School for the Creative and Performing Arts, which is an intimate space, 750 seats. And I can't tell you how many audience members have come up to me after the first two performances and said, I understood every single word. I didn't even look at the supertitles. It's a blessing.
Well, what do you hear most often as, if you may, an excuse why folks aren't coming to the opera? I know you are a big cheerleader for the opera, and I know you run into the folks that go, oh, opera, meh. What do you hear most often?
I think the things that intimidate people the most is that they don't know how to, quote, behave at an opera. You know, when am I supposed to applaud? Am I supposed to get dressed up in fancy clothing? What if I don't understand the story? And those are all very reasonable barriers because nobody wants to feel out of place. You know, when you buy a ticket to a pop concert, you know what you're getting. You know, you go out to River Bend, you sit amongst people you know and people who look like you, and you hear a band that, you know, you've bought their CDs or you've listened to them on the radio. It's all very part of your day-to-day life. You go to an opera, you see people who are dressed up. You see some people who aren't dressed up, I might add. And they think there's all sorts of protocol. There's no protocol. You go there, and the only thing that I ask of anybody that comes into an opera theater is open your heart. That's all you have to do. Open your heart and your mind will follow. You don't have to know anything about opera. You should look at the title to see and the synopsis on our website to see if the story has any appeal to you. Most stories do because they have a tremendously human element. But I get the barrier that I don't know how to behave. You don't have to worry about that anymore. You can come to opera in jeans and a t-shirt as far as I'm concerned. And we do have patrons who come to opera in jeans and a t-shirt. You don't have any barrier about the language anymore because you look at the supertitles. Now, some people say opera's too long. You know, there's a wonderful T-shirt that I think San Francisco Opera put out is, you know, life is short, opera is long, you know. Ars longa, opera longa vita brevis, right, in the Latin. And yes, there are operas that are longer, but there are operas that are shorter, too. And all you have to do is check it out. For example, Galileo Galilei is in one act, 90 minutes. That's it. Aida's longer because it's a grand opera, but it goes by in a flash.
Ah, so much happening on the stage to keep you enthralled. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7. I'm Mark Purcell. Thane Maynard talks with Eric Rutkow about his book, American Canopy, Trees, Forests, and the Making of a Nation. Just ahead, and later best-selling author Curtis Sittenfeld will be here, but right now opera is the subject. Our Cincinnati opera, artistic director Evans Mirage is here in the studio with me, and we have a call from Andy, who loves opera and is wants to talk about Galileo. Good afternoon, Andy.
Evans, how are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for calling.
Oh, right, my pleasure. I'm actually, full disclosure, I am singing the role of Galileo in Galileo.
Andy Garland. Oh, shame on you.
But I just wanted to back up what you said, Evans, about how all the so many audience members after the show are saying how much they loved it. And I just wanted to add to that, in my some 15 years experience of singing opera, I meet literally dozens of audience members after every show, no matter what kind of a show it is. And many of them say, I did not want to come to this. I did not expect I was going to like it. And I loved it. So statistically, the skeptical opera goer will like it.
So, Andy,
my experience.
So, Andy, when you run into folks and you tell them, "Well, I'm an opera singer. I sing in opera," and they say, "Well, I've never been to an opera." What do you say to persuade them to try out opera?
Well, there is nothing I can say to describe how it's going to be. I can say, trust me, I guarantee you're going to like it because everyone else has. And yes, it has a lot of the elements that your other media have. The sex and violence and intrigue, grand scale and intimacy all at the same time. It really does.
Well,
and I've never steered anyone wrong.
Not yet. Well, thank you for your call, Andy.
Thanks,
and
Andy.
Thanks for your performances, too, as it goes along. And I was going to ask you about Galileo. Well, not so much Galileo, but that's a relatively new opera, but when it comes to a grand opera like Aida that's been produced who knows how many times, what do you have to do to update it, to bring it more and make it more appealing to today's audience?
One of the things that we try and do, because we love collaborating, is to make certain that we reach out and make the opera slightly different every time. Now, animals weren't a part of Aida when Verdi wrote it. He never envisioned having animals in the grand procession, but it's become a tradition. And in this particular iteration of the production, we have two amazing horses, a wonderful hawk that are part of the triumphal procession. The horses actually come from the recently disbanded mounted police force here in Cincinnati.
Really?
And one of their riders is still on the force, is doing something different now, and the other one is a rider who has taken one of the horses in, as it were. But these horses are thrilling. To see these huge beasts come on the stage is a thrill. And it's another reason, if you love animals, for example, come to Aida, because you will see these amazing horses participating in the production. But beyond that, what we try and do every single time is change up the casting a little bit and try and bring someone new to Cincinnati audiences to the cast. So we have this wonderful combination of returning veterans and newcomers. Our newcomer is the title role, Aida. A young woman by the name of LaTanya Moore, originally from Texas, sprung to international stardom overnight last season when you heard it right on the WGUC on the Saturday afternoon Met broadcast when they broadcast Aida. The scheduled singer was ill. LaTanya Moore, who was the understudy, went on and sang for millions of people around the world, shot internationally to stardom. She's our Aida. And I think you will cry with joy when you hear this voice. One of the most amazing lyric soprano voices I've heard in 30 years.
Chris from Wyoming joining us now on Cincinnati Edition. Good afternoon, Chris.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to add, I've been to several of the operas this season, most recently the Galileo at the Corbett Theater, which I thought was a great experience. Like your comments have added, that it's easy to understand and that, you know, to see the performers up close like that really, it does add to the theater of opera. But in addition to that, the experience of being down in the Washington Park area and down in the area immediately surrounding Music Hall, it has transformed in mm-hmm. recent months that the experience of that, you know, going out to eat beforehand, parking is so easy, it's really added to the entire experience.
I think Over the Rhine has become one of the most magical neighborhoods in the country, not just because those of us who have been around for a long time and knew it before when it was down at the mouth, as it were, but it is now a destination. It is the heart of the city of Cincinnati, and it's a beautiful place with the park. One of the things I love when I walk into work in the morning is seeing, even by, let's say, 9:30 in the morning, 50 to 75 kids playing in the water feature.
Oh, yes.
You know, it's better than a swimming pool because you can run around. And kids of all ages, including some adults who have probably no business running around, but I'm sure they're supervising their children. But not only that, the gazebo where you hear music performances, the grand lawn where we have performed, and the main area where the Cincinnati Symphony has performed as well. It's just a glorious, glorious restoration of what was always designed by Hannaford back in the 1870s to be the heart of Cincinnati. It's been restored.
Well, thank you for your call, Chris, and thank you for being here this afternoon, Evans. Greatly appreciated.
My pleasure. See you at the opera.
Indeed. Evans Miragis, the artistic director of the Cincinnati Opera. Their remaining productions are Philip Glass's Galileo Galilei and Aida by Giuseppe Verdi. They will be produced on alternating nights beginning on Wednesday. Find out all about it at our website, wvxu.org. And try out the opera. See what it's like.